My name is Dr. Carl Bester. I'm a registered research psychologist and a senior lecturer at the University of South Africa. I'm also an executive committee member within the Division for Research and Methodology. Welcome
to our first ever division podcast for the Division for Research and Methodology, where we do and speak research psychology. Our topic today focuses on artificial intelligence and its relevance on psychological research and its overall impact on the psychology discipline. Now, the integration of AI or artificial intelligence into psychology services has opened up new opportunities in understanding, diagnosing, and treating mental health conditions. Now, AI has emerged as a transformative tool in various domains and disciplines that enables innovative approaches to personalized care, early intervention, and therapeutic support, as well as creative ways to conduct research. Now, the intersection of AI and psychology represents a paradigm shift in mental health services, offering a wide spectrum of applications designed to augment traditional methods in psychology. Now, the marriage of AI and psychology holds significant potential for mental health research and practice, but also offers opportunities for personalized and precise diagnosis and early intervention, as well as the development of innovative and therapeutic approaches. Now, the integration of AI algorithms into mental health services has the potential to revolutionize the field, leading to more effective and efficient care. But now, on the flip side, there are also those that are against the integration of AI into a discipline that is and has been uniquely positioned to focus on the human element. Now, without delaying the reveal of our podcast guest today. Now, our guest has a wealth of experience and knowledge about research and consulting, and she's also an author. But more importantly, she is the chair of the CISA Division for Research and Methodology. Leonie Forster joins us today on the podcast, our first ever podcast. Now, Leonie is a research psychologist with 400 plus research and research-based consulting assignments under the belt for clients in more than 40 countries on 5 continents. She believes in the effective and just use of ethically sourced information for positive impact and is passionate about producing accessible and actionable insights from research. Now, Leonie has also written, edited, and presented 170 plus articles and papers, as well as talks, and is the author of Type Seeds, a magical realism novel. Leonie, welcome, and it's good to have you on our podcast.
Thanks, Kyle. Wonderful to be with you, and greetings to all the listeners.
So, Leonie, what can you tell us about AI?
Sure. Where to start, hey? It's hit the world by storm. Let me start with the global picture. In the last couple of weeks, the president of one of the international associations on the commercial side of research did a survey amongst researchers and actually already found that about 80% have started using AI. Or are testing it in some form. So I think it's here. It's not even on its way. It's already here. I think of AI as a researcher. It uses data, it analyzes it, and it interprets the results. But also, like the rest of us who are researchers, it can make mistakes and it has biases. So for me, AI has two sides. It's got a bit of a split at the moment, as you've mentioned, in terms of support and not support for AI. But I do think it holds a massive opportunity for research, provided we pay attention to some of the risks that are involved.
Okay, cool. So you mentioned about the opportunities and the potential risks. Are you able to share a couple of opportunities that it may have for the psychology discipline in South Africa?
On the research side, more than the kind of intervention side. So let me speak to the research side. I think in terms of designing and managing and conducting and reporting, applying and advancing research methodologies and practice, the AI opportunity lies in doing things a lot more efficiently and giving us almost more freedom to do the thinking. We should pay more attention to the quality of the primary data that we collect and the secondary data that we use. But AI will allow us to do research with enhanced efficiency and with more data and do a lot more complex analyses than we can at the moment. And it will actually give us the opportunity to be more creative in terms of the research that we're doing. But it can also lead to losing the art or the skills in research, and changes will happen. I think I'm predicting a little bit, but I think there'll be changes in academic and applied research value chains, and the risk of errors and biases that I mentioned that can negatively impact decisions and interventions that are based on the research that we do. I think that that is something that we need to just be aware of. And so for psychology and for the application of the research in practice, there are a couple of things that AI can do. It's already being used to draft research instruments, for example, and come up with a discussion guide. It's already used for collecting secondary data. Typically your ChatGPT and OpenAI uses the internet and all the information on the web and uses that as data in its thinking. You can also already collect primary data using, for example, a virtual reality interviewer. And I saw a brilliant demonstration of that the other day. It was actually with very sensitive about a very sensitive topic, namely sex toys. And that actually worked a lot better with a virtual reality interviewer than it would have, you know, with a interviewer who is human. So that's also some of the opportunities. And then analyzing qualitative data, the AI, even as we speak, is able to code, to summarize, to identify themes, to work out frequencies. And that's just kind of on the qualitative side. On the quantitative side, it can do everything that we can do as humans, other than making sense of the results and applying that within a specific context. It can even write reports, and it can develop a research presentation in PowerPoint or whatever you ask it to do. So I think all of those things are opportunities with associated risks.
Yeah, I'm also just considering what you also noted now, the role of AI and the opportunities it does provide, you know, in your research and in terms of analyzing your data. And I think from my experience, I have started to almost embrace the use of AI in terms of my writing, for example. I think Grammarly has this tool where you can actually, it actually improves what you have noted down in your email. And it is that also, that level of dependence that it created for me now, where I can't function without it anymore because it writes just so much better than what I'm able to do in my normal capacity without using it, you know, using this particular software. So I think it does present that level of improvement, that efficiency. But I think that level of dependency, as someone that's also very cautious in terms, you know, in cyberspace, that level of dependency scares me a bit. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so those were some of the losses that I was talking about. So not only in research skills, but in things like language and writing skills, that we will start to lose some of the skills because AI can take over that, and it makes it a lot more efficient, or they can do it better and quicker than we can. So we have to still take responsibility. So using AI to be better is a real opportunity, but we cannot abdicate our responsibilities as research psychologists. That should never be an option. So for me, it's a healthy balance between doing things faster and doing things more efficient and working with bigger data sets, more complex data sets, but not abdicating what it is that we do as research psychologists when we are, especially in terms of the analysis and in terms of how that information is used. So one of the projects I'm working on at the moment has, it's 5 research questions, but they're 20 documents totaling more than 4,000 pages. So it's a huge study. And we have 3 weeks to analyze it. Now that would take months and months if we had to do that manually. But using something like Atlas TI, which is what I'm using, with conversational AI and with AI coding, actually doesn't simplify it in terms of the thinking that goes behind it, but it cuts down on the time of it. Well, significantly, actually. But I still have to go through what AI produces and actually verify that. And that verification process is the very first thing that I think needs to be done to make sure that we don't abdicate our responsibility as researchers. And then the second part is, once you've validated what AI has come up with against the data, whether it's qualitative or quantitative, doesn't matter. You still have to do that validation, especially at this point in time with where AI is at. But the second part is for interpreting and disseminating research results. Our responsibility as researchers, and especially as research psychologists and as psychologists in the broader sense, our responsibility is just increasing with AI. So even though we can use it and almost certain things will be much easier to do, and we might even forget how to do them manually, but there are parts of that process when we start interpreting the results and when we start disseminating the results and applying them to human beings. That responsibility, the more you use AI, the bigger that responsibility becomes. So I don't see it as we'll lose all of that and we won't kind of be taking responsibility for our research anymore. I think it will actually increase the level of responsibility that we have to take. And then I just wanted to make a comment about the global regulation. So global regulation of AI is underway, following more or less the same process that the legislation like GDPR in Europe and POPIA in South Africa followed to protect privacy of information. Like with any legislation, while it won't stop unethical or illegal use of AI in this instance, it will draw or irresponsible use even, it will draw a distinction between those that do things ethically and those that do things unethically. And so the more we start using AI, the bigger the responsibility becomes for us to actually use it ethically. And make sure that others use it as ethically. And that's kind of what the regulators are currently trying to do.
Awesome. I think when it comes to regulation in South Africa, I think South Africa is notoriously also known for taking its time when it comes to the actual implementation of regulation, guidelines, frameworks. If I look at a simple example, the National Cybersecurity Policy Framework. Mm-hmm. It took almost 10 years for it actually to be implemented in a South African context and to perfectly allocate who is responsible for which aspect in cyberspace, which, for example, security actors responsible for coordination and the execution of certain, you know, offensive and defensive strategies. That's just an example. But I think there is this level of delay that we almost sort of playing catch up in a sense to the world, in essence. And if you look at the global cybersecurity index, for example, and I know maybe this is minutely related to what AI does in South African context, mm-hmm. we are rated as South Africa very low in terms of our policies, our activities to actually introduce certain actions to safeguard us from, for example, threats in cyberspace. And I think the regulatory framework that has to address the AI component in South Africa has to also address that element of rapidness in terms of how it is rapidly introduced in our social context, that idea of behavior. And I think a lot of our policies don't speak to behavior. And I also think that is where us as psychologists and where our discipline is actually important within the introduction of AI as this transformative force in our South African context.
Yeah, so I think we should start taking on a role of using AI to serve that transformation agenda. Psychology has been often left out, where it's, even if you go back to COVID protocols, the mental side of things, the mental health side of things, didn't actually feature there until much later in the pandemic. Same with AI. So this is kind of our opportunity to stand up our field and our approach with humans first and health, mental health, that actually feeds into the regulation. So it's almost an opportunity, seeing as the regulations are being developed at the moment. And there is this kind of tradition in across the African continent, actually, to sit back a little bit and wait and then leapfrog. And there's already some talk about Africa leapfrogging in terms of AI. So waiting for other people to make the mistakes, to get the regulations going, and then to kind of shortcut all of that and just do it much faster and more efficiently when we finally kind of catch up. So it's almost, instead of catching up, it's leapfrogging. So that is one of the things. But I also think it is our responsibility to ask the right questions when we are using AI software, for example, as part of our research. So even in the absence of regulation and legislation, there's still ethical rules and there's still the right way to do it. One of the global associations in research came up with a list of 20 questions. And I think they're actually working on a 21st question, which would make it not such a round number anymore. But the so things are changing, and they're changing fast. But some of the things that we can do in the absence of regulation, so even if our regulations come in 10 years' time, we don't want to, it's a global scenario. So we don't want to do anything that's not in the interest of humans and mental health. So I would suggest that we use the kind of 20 questions. I'm going to talk briefly through them, Carl, if you'll allow me, not all 20, but they group into five groupings. So the first one is looking at the organization that's providing the software. And the company profile or the organization profile, what is their experience? Do they have the necessary know-how? What are the features and the benefits of the software? And what has worked and what hasn't worked, because everyone is still in development. So that's kind of the first thing, is just to look at the reputation of the organization and what it is that they're offering in terms of AI. Then secondly, the actual AI capability or the service, how do they explain that? And is it fit for purpose? Because not everything works for everything. They must be able to explain it to you in simple, non-technical terms. If they're not able to do that, and if they can't explain to you how the algorithms they are using are delivering the results that you see on screen, and what the underlying data is that they're using, and how they're training the software, then it would be a no from me. So they have to be able to explain all those things, and it has to fit the purpose that you need it for. Thirdly, trustworthiness. So ethical conduct, trustworthiness, transparency. How do they verify the information? How do they look? How do they determine whether things are accurate or not? How do they do their validation? How do they deal with bias? They have to be able to tell you what the model limitations and mitigations are. Similar to what we do in research, we always have the limitations of research. This is ultimately research and research software. So that they have to be able to tell you that, and they have to explain how they take on their duty of care. And I think that's in the absence of legislation that forces software companies, for example, to do that, they have to do it themselves. And if they can't prove that they take on that duty of care, it's not someone we should be working with. Fourthly, human oversight of the AI system. So how do humans come into it on their side, and which ethical principles do they apply? And how do they make sure that they innovate responsibly? So some of the organizations are already setting up ethical review boards for their software to check that everything happens the way it should and that it's not used and abused. And then lastly, the data governance protocols. And I've just referred to some of that, but things like privacy, how do they make sure it's the data is of good quality? Where does the data come from? What is their privacy notice? What is their data and privacy protection policies? Information security, you've mentioned security. They have to be able to explain how they secure the information and how they secure the system so that people can't add information in that they're not even aware of. Those are some of the fears that people have. And then data ownership, who owns the data that goes in and who owns the data that comes out? And then the sovereignty of the data, in other words, whether it's almost ring-fenced if you are inputting data. So for example, in Atlas TI, if you use the AI component, it's not used to train their models, and they do not keep a copy of it. So you use the software on top of the data. You don't put the data into the worldwide ChatGPT system. So those are some of the things I think we can take responsibility, even in the absence of regulation. And yeah, so we don't have to wait for the regulation. We can already take some steps now to make sure that whoever we use are actually using AI ethically. So that would be my, to kind of hold our breath and wait for regulation. We've learned, even with Popia, it takes so long and it is such a tedious process that you have to want to do it long before you have to do it.
Yeah. You know what, Leonie, I'm sitting here with a lot of questions and actually my thoughts are all over the place, to be honest, because the first thing is the human is the weakest element in a security chain, and you did address that element of security concern, information security. And if you look at our recent spate of cyber threats in the country, and we've, as many organizations and specifically government parastatals have been impacted by cyber threats. But this is a side note. I think if I come back to the human being the weakest link in the security chain or the cybersecurity chain, or in the information security chain, it raises a lot of concerns about AI and the role of AI, specifically when we look at organizations that have to deal with security, for example. And yes, there are regulatory frameworks such as the PUPI Act that addresses the element of who is responsible at the end of the day for maintaining the safety of the customers or the client's data, or even the employee's data. How is it managed? How is it stored? What security measures are we implementing to safeguard the data, the information? But one of the questions that I actually want to touch on is, because we see a gap for psychology in the role of AI, and if we have to look at the development of psychology as a discipline in South Africa, because AI has now immersed itself into our daily lives. I mean, essentially, we can include AI into 4IR, the fourth industrial revolution. And part of the fourth industrial revolution is the emergence, it's the integration of technology into our daily lives and into our daily functioning. But now, when we speak about our scope of practice as research psychologists, but also the scope of practices in the psychology discipline itself, do you think that there should be a call for redevelopment in terms of widening certain scopes or elements in the scope to include the use of AI? Because if you look at the research psychology scope of practice, it says that we are responsible for disseminating psychological research. But now with the inclusion of AI, it throws almost that spanner in the works, because not only are we governed by the Health Professions Council's Ethical Code of Conduct, we are also now having to abide to the AI Ethical Code of Conduct. Do you see that there's perhaps an opportunity to merge the two, or should we separate the two completely and stick to our guns, stick to our scope of practice, and rather just call for a new category that speaks to, for example, cyber psychology, which integrates AI? And, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, interesting. I mean, well, time will tell, but let me give you my thoughts as you asked. I do think that ultimately, as a professional, we still have to take responsibility for the way that our research is used. Taking responsibility for how AI uses our research, that for me is the minefield. And that is something that's not kind of currently in the scope. I'm always more likely to support an integrative approach than a separate or separating approach, because I do think that if we are using AI as part of research or even as part of psychology, that remains part of our responsibility. You spoke of dissemination of results, and for example, if AI comes up with an intervention strategy, it is for psychological intervention, it would still be the professional's responsibility to validate what it comes up with, to verify it, and to take responsibility for how it is used. For research side, the research side of it is actually easier, I think, than the kind of broader field of psychology, because in terms of the research, not inputting information into AI training models is an option for us, and it's almost an imperative. at this point to not add information that can be, that might be confidential into, or that is confidential into a public process or a worldwide process. So that's one of the kind of things that I think we need to be very clear on. There are other ways, or the things that we are used to doing as researchers, for example, anonymizing information. All of that still needs to be done, even if you are using AI software to analyze the information. You anonymize first to try and mitigate some of the risks around security. But I would be very sad if we abdicated our role as professionals and our responsibility for how research is done and used to AI completely or even significantly. I think we do need to integrate it as part of any of the training as AI develops. I think it should be integrated into scope of practice, and it should be integrated into the research that we're doing, the research training, to make sure that it's part of the same training and not a separate kind of add-on thing.
Great. Thank you so much for your insights today, Leonie. I think our listeners and the DRM division really appreciates your insights, your perspectives, but also your wealth of knowledge that you can contribute to this particular topic. I think ultimately I'm left, and I think our listeners are also left with a lot of questions, and hopefully this particular podcast will allow us to have more questions, you know, to be critical in terms of AI in our context, and ultimately embracing that stance of the buck stops and ends with the human element, because ultimately we are in a human-centered profession. So thank you very much for joining us today, Leonie. We really appreciate your insights and your perspectives on this particular topic. My name is Kyle Bester, over and out.
Thank you for joining us on the DRM podcast, where we focus on interesting research, fascinating methodologies, and everything in between. If you would like to be part of our Division for Research and Methodology podcasts, please follow us on social media, be on the lookout for the call for participation, and simply follow the submission instructions.